Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Listening to The Beauty of Our Weapons by M. Darusha Wayne. For more information, go to darusha.ca/weapons. Episode 6, Chapter 11. Dex never learned the name of the woman at the cafe, but that didn't bother him. She held strong opinions, all right, and maybe would even act on them given the opportunity. But after another half hour of conversation, it became obvious that she didn't have the ability to do any of the things she advocated. The rest of the conversation was mostly more of the same, but Dex found it almost amusing. And it proved that even if this particular person wasn't a real threat, the ideas were out there. On his way back to his apartment, his system pinged him with a call from Annabelle. "Can we meet tonight?" she asked. "I've looked over the reports from Larson's case file, including some of the new entries." "And?" Dex asked. "It's kind of confusing," Annabelle said. "Let's get together and I'll tell you all about it." "Sure," Dex said. "Shall we say Monty's?" "Sounds good," Annabelle answered. "I'll link in as soon as my shift here is over. And maybe after we can go over to that hole in the wall you and Rene Biagini seem to like so much." Dex grinned widely to himself, and for a brief moment wondered how funny he looked walking down the street, alone, smiling like a madman. "Sounds wonderful," he said. "Now you'd better get back to work, or millions of people might have to wait an extra 30 seconds for their train." "Oh, shut up, you," Annabelle laughed. "See you tonight." Dex spent a couple of hours in his apartment, paging around several different boards. He'd poke around one for a while, see a post that gave a link to another board, page over there for a while, and repeat. He ended up wasting the afternoon following the link trails and getting no real clues. No one was talking about perpetrating the specific kind of mayhem that he was seeing in M-City, but there was plenty of disturbing talk. He flagged the more overtly antagonistic posts to the General Inquiry case file, wondering if anyone anywhere was monitoring these boards. Then he started to think about the feeling he'd had at the light of the Simulacrum Temple, how it reminded him of an art installation. He wondered if there was anyone he could talk to who knew more than him, someone in the industry. He looked through his video files, trying to find a record of one of the galleries he'd gone to with Annabelle. Eventually, he remembered that he and Annabelle had gone to see a show at the Looking Through Doors and Windows Gallery a few months previously, and had met the curator briefly. He couldn't remember the woman's name, but he must have liked what he'd seen that day, because the video record was still in his files. He paged over to his viewer and loaded the file. The space was, as most M-City locations were constructed, much larger on the inside than on the outside. In this case, the small storefront opened into a single, almost cavernous white room, with only a small table near the door. The curator had installed herself at the table, greeting the visitors and offering audio or text overly didactic narratives to accompany the work. Dex had taken the audio file, not wanting to pollute his visual space with the floating text. It was an installation of work from several new artists, who Dex's audio tutor explained were exploring post-humanist transspatial themes. He hadn't known what that meant at the time, and he didn't have any more of an idea now, but he did know that some of the pieces were very interesting. When the curator turned on the piece from the first artist, nothing seemed to happen. However, as Dex and Annabelle had walked through the space, imagery would become instantiated in the places they visited, but only once they'd moved on. There were almost invisible footprints which followed their movements in strange, almost cartoonish images of speed lines or ghostly figures. The whole experience was quite odd, as if Dex and Annabelle were the tools of the artist and created the show themselves. The next piece was more conventional, at least in that when it was instantiated, the gallery space was instantly transformed into the installation. It was a representation of space, as seen from the perspective of a craft hurtling through the solar system. As each planet or asteroid was approached, a loud warning bleeping noise would occur, and a garish advert would cover the simulated view screen. Dex didn't like it as much, and they quickly moved on to the next one. Dex watched the rest of his video memory and smiled at the reminiscence of a very nice time out with Annabelle. He brought himself back to the task at hand, and reversed the file back to the beginning, and had the video focus on only the sections containing the curator. Dex and Annabelle really had very little interaction with the woman, tending to talk on a private channel with each other rather than on the public gallery feed. Dex watched her response to their reactions to the pieces, though, and saw that she, too, seemed to be more impressed with the first artwork. He could see her appraising look on all the pieces as they toured the gallery, and he wondered about her. He sent a message through the contact link for the gallery, hoping that the curator would get back to him. He could use a professional opinion. He closed out the video record and, not for the first time, was thankful for his expensive habit of recording his life. He occasionally considered junking his old vids of his ancient musical career. He used to play in a small bar band, back before the Cubicle Men days. He fancied himself a real rebel, holding no job, making do on tips and scrounging. He used to think that those were the best days of his life, that everything else was downhill from there. Now, he knew that he'd recaptured a lot of what had made those days special. The joy of the music, the sense of freedom, the connection with his friends. If he lost those old vids, he guessed that he could free up enough space to possibly make a play in the hosting space for M-City, which could be quite lucrative. Unlike the EverywhereNet backbone, space in M-City wasn't regulated by a single consortium of the firms. Rather, the memory that was needed to run it was distributed among hundreds of thousands of different nodes. Dex believed that divisions of a couple of the smaller firms were responsible for supplying a good amount of the space, but a large amount of it was actually run by individuals or independent groups. Dex had often thought that if his cash flow became tight, he could rent out some of his onboard disk space for rendering in M-City. If he were more ruthless in terms of the files he kept, he could easily host his own office, as well as up to a couple more similar spaces. It would easily double his net take-home pay, but he still wasn't quite ready to give up the memories. He might only rarely watch the vids, but he liked the way he felt, knowing that they were there. A half hour before he was scheduled to meet Annabelle, Dex ate a food brick and poured a small tumbler of Kanya rum, the expensive liquor made from real sugarcane that he treated himself to when he had some spare cash. When things were really flush, he also bought real ginger beer from a woman in the South Tower at Liberté who brewed her own. He wasn't that well off now, though, so it was just rum and water. Compared to the synthetic Jamaica's Best he used to drink, it was almost a shame to add another flavor anyway. He was settled comfortably in his chair, drink close at hand, when he linked into Monty's. Annabelle was already there, her own pink concoction sweating on the table in front of her. He walked over to her table and she slipped out of the seat to give him a hug. He kissed her long and then sat down across from her. "Sorry about yesterday," he said. "I didn't mean to go off on you like that about the uploading. I just wasn't ready for that conversation right then." "It's okay," Annabelle said. "I shouldn't have sprung it on you like that. Amazingly, I still sometimes forget that you're not exactly like me." She grinned and Dex laughed. "How you could ever forget that, I'll never know," he said. "We're like the dictionary examples of opposites attracting." "Only sometimes, honey," Annabelle said. "Sometimes we're so alike it's scary." "Like when?" Dex asked, genuinely curious. "Like now," Annabelle said. "You really think most people want to spend a night out with their sweetheart talking shop?" Dex thought for a moment, then laughed. "I guess not," he said. "Maybe we are well suited after all. Okay then, let's get down to business." "You sweet talker, you," Annabelle said. "So, the sort of good news is that I'm pretty certain that the Simulacrum Temple was done by a human operator." "Okay," Dex said. "And that's good news because a bug would be way worse than a person, right?" "Bingo," Annabelle said. "And also because it means that we might actually be able to identify the jerk and maybe even get some compensation for the temple." "All right," Dex said. "So what's the confusing part?" "Well, I was operating under the assumption that what happened with Stella Bish, the Simulacrum people, and the rest of the anomalies were all the result of a common cause." "And they aren't," Dex guessed. Annabelle shook her head. "There's no data for Bish's experiences, so I can't determine anything about that," she said. "But the other events that have been reported show entirely different results." She took a sip of her drink and then went on. I got copies of code from similar scenes around Damn City, those image distortions I was telling you about. Dex nodded. And what's confusing me is that they all shared some similarities, all except the code from the light of the simulacrum. Huh, Dex grunted. You're right, that is confusing. Is there something special about the original objects at the temple that might account for the differences? Annabelle shook her head. It's not the original code that shows the similarities, she explained. In the intersection between the original imagery and the distorted objects, there are a few lines of code that are all very similar in all the cases I looked at from the file. Everything's pretty fucked up, of course, and I can't quite make out what it's trying to execute. From what I can tell, it's some kind of a timer, but that's just guesswork. A timer? Dex repeated, mulling over the information Annabelle had given him. Annabelle nodded, and Dex noticed a small smile begin to creep over her face. So, if these events are timed, Dex mused aloud, then it follows that they're deliberate acts, which means that some intelligent agent is probably responsible. Bingo again! Give the pretty fella a prize, Annabelle said, the smile fully blossoming. I'd bet the farm that we have human perpetrators, and at least two completely separate sets. Now that is why we keep you around, Dex said, grinning. But I have to ask one thing. What's that? The farm? Dex questioned, raising an eyebrow. Even if you had a farm, would you care if you lost it? I might like a farm, Annabelle answered, mock indignation in her face. Why not? I could see myself on a farm, maybe. Right, Dex laughed. I can just see you, elbow deep in a mound of dirt, pulling some vegetable out of the ground. Annabelle wrinkled her nose. Now you're just being disgusting. As Annabelle was finishing her drink, she looked at Dex and smiled. Why don't we blow this joint, she said. I've been home for a bit, eaten something, and I could stand to get out and stretch my legs a little. Le Retro? Dex asked. Why not? Annabelle suggested. It's pretty quiet at this time of night, isn't it? Sure, Dex said. The rowdies never last that long at the Ret. They usually clear out by midnight locals, so by now it should just be the real Nighthawks. And the other time shifters, Annabelle pointed out. Right, Dex agreed. Sounds like a good plan to me. I'll pick you up at your place in, say, 20 minutes. I'll be ready, Annabelle said and linked out of Monty's. Dex waved his chipped hand over the reader on the gleaming stainless door of Annabelle's apartment. Almost immediately, the door slid open, and Annabelle's voice sounded in his head through his onboard system, while simultaneously Dex could hear her call out, "Come in!" She was walking out of the lab while wanding her hair as Dex stepped into her large sitting room. "You look great," he said, eyeing her oddly familiar-looking diaphanous yellow dress. "What's the occasion?" "What do you mean?" she said, giving him a dirty look. "You're saying I usually look like meatloaf?" "Come on," Dex said. Then Annabelle laughed. "I'm just playing with you," she said. "I found this cute little shop that specializes in online-offline reproductions. I really like this dress and figured it was about time I got a new outfit for out here, since I'm actually going places where I can be seen in them." "Well," Dex said, "it's a winner in my books. Let's go show it off a little." He took her arm and they walked to the local train stop. After a short ride, they were easing into a booth in Le Retro. As Dex had predicted, the cafe and bar was quiet. There were about a dozen or more patrons in groups of two or three, but there were plenty of seats, and the atmosphere was casual. A server came over to their table quickly, and Dex ordered his usual rum and ginger. "And for the lady?" the waiter asked. "How's your bubbly water?" Annabelle asked. "Wet and fizzy," the server answered deadpan. "I'll take it," Annabelle said, and turned on a 1,000-watt smile for the server. She got a tired but genuine smile in return before the waiter walked back to the bar. "This is a tough shift," Annabelle said. "I think it's one of those jobs where being run off your feet is better than a slow day," Dex said. "The time goes by a little faster." Annabelle nodded, and the server returned with her drinks. Dex lifted his glass to Annabelle and said, "Here's to all your tedious checking and rechecking, and the first real lead we've had in this thing." Annabelle toasted Dex, but shook her head. "It's all just hard work, Dex. You know that. Every case is about plugging away at the puzzle until it has no choice but to unravel. I'm just glad it can be helpful." Dex grinned. "Now that's a real stumper," he said, his eyes twinkling. "What kind of puzzle unravels? A knitted one? And how do you plug it knitting?" "You know what I meant," Annabelle protested, and Dex laughed. "Of course," he said. "It's just that was one of the worst mixed metaphors I've ever heard. And you should hear Rene Biagini after he's had a bottle of synth wine." "Maybe I should at that," Annabelle said, though her voice sounded less sure than her words. The three of us could go out sometime, I suppose. That would be a hoot, Deck said, but it wouldn't be three. That man has new human arm jewelry every time I talk to him. More's a party, Annabelle said, sounding less sure about the whole idea. Maybe next month sometime? They stayed at the bar for a couple of hours, Dex putting away another cheap dark and stormy, Annabelle sticking to the wet and fizzy. Dex knew that she was probably using some kind of online stim. He didn't begrudge her choice of poison, he simply didn't share it. The sun was peeking up over the horizon when they settled their tab, and Annabelle took Dex's arm as they walked to the train stop. "We've got a gig at Fred's in a couple of days," Dex was saying as they waited for the train. "I was hoping I'd see you there." "I wouldn't miss it," Annabelle said. "But you'll be seeing plenty of me before then. If you want to, of course." She looked up at him with a sly look on her face. "Oh, really?" Dex asked, slipping his arm around her shoulder. The train pulled into the stop, and Annabelle put her arm around Dex's waist. She stepped onto the train and pulled him along with her. "Come on," she said as the door shut behind him. "I'm just about ready for bed. Aren't you?" Chapter 12. It was already late afternoon when Dex woke, and he had a slight moment of panic when he rolled over and saw Annabelle's sleeping face scrunched into the pillow next to him. Then he remembered that her weekend was just starting, and she could sleep as long as she liked. He slipped quietly out of the bed, and made his way as softly as he could to the lav. He was hoping to let her rest as long as he could. She woke about a half hour later, and Dex smiled over the lip of the mug of coffee he'd made himself. "Morning, gorgeous," he said, as she blinked the sleep out of her eyes. "Did I ever sleep in?" she said. "Why didn't you get me up?" "Why should I?" Dex asked. "There's nowhere you need to be, and it's not like I get to watch you sleep every day." He grinned at her, and she dropped her eyelids bashfully. "I have to pick a guy with a drool fixation," she said, swinging her legs over the side of the bed. "What next? You'll want to watch me cut my nails?" "Not now," Dex said. "I can't handle that kind of excitement this early." Annabelle laughed as she walked into the lav, and Dex busied himself by making her a small pot of tea. They were sitting on the small sofa, looking out the window and chatting when both of their systems pinged simultaneously. They shared a glance at each other, then each accessed their messengers. "Still a bish," Dex said. "And it looks like she's gotten into a real spot of bother this time," Annabelle said, reading the note from Captain Van Moore of the Guadalajara squad. "She's still offline now," Annabelle said. "This must be killing her business." "It can't be good for it," Dex agreed. "Not to mention how disturbing it would be to be cut off from all communications. I don't envy her, that's for sure." "It's kind of ironic, though, don't you think?" Annabelle said. "What is?" Dex asked, patching a video channel through to Gabriel Van Moore. "Bish being forced off the nets," Annabelle said. "After all the noise she's made about how people should spend more time offline, isn't it funny that now she's getting to spend all the time in the world out here?" "I guess," Dex said. "This isn't what she had in mind, you know." "I know," Annabelle said. "It just kind of makes me laugh." "I know you don't like her very much," Dex said. "Last I heard," Annabelle countered, "you didn't either." "She's not my favorite person," Dex said, "but she doesn't deserve this." Annabelle nodded, then jumped in as a silent observer to the video call. "Captain Van Moore," Dex said, as the face of the Guadalajara captain appeared on his screen. The unnatural youth that everyone over age 50 enjoyed. The same strange, stunted maturity that he, Annabelle, and just about everyone else he knew shared. Van Moore was as ordinary-looking as anyone, including the small blonde woman sitting on his right. But Dex knew that she was no ordinary person. Rather, that she was the physical embodiment of the online mogul, Stella Bish. "Lieutenant Dexter," Van Moore answered. "I'm glad I was able to connect with you so quickly. Miss Bish is, understandably, very concerned." "Yes," Dex said. "Stella, are you all right?" Bish looked toward the tiny lens Van Moore had set into the opposite wall and said in a small voice, "Yes, I'm fine for the moment. But I hope very much that this does not last long. I've just learned that the Sonera Group is trying to poach two of my best designers away from me. They claim to be operating a dress shop in M-City, if you can believe it. This is very inconvenient timing." "Have you been able to contact any of your technicians?" Dex asked. Bish shook her head. "I know a few freelancers here," she said, "but no one I trust with something like this." "I have a colleague on the call with us who may be able to help," Dex said, looking over at Annabelle in her apartment. She nodded slightly and he continued, Annabelle Lewis, she may be able to help from here. Bish looked at Van Moore, who said, Lewis is probably the best cracker and technician we have in the whole organization, Ms. Bish. You couldn't be in better hands. Bish didn't look entirely convinced, but she also must have realized that she had little choice. Okay, she said. What do I have to do? They spent over 2 hours on the call, Annabelle having Bish try several times to log into the nets. Finally, they resorted to an assisted remote diagnostic. Annabelle would tell Van Moore what to do, and he'd tell her what happened. Dex didn't understand a tenth of what they were talking about, so he busied himself by getting Annabelle more tea and the occasional bit of a food brick. Eventually, Annabelle shook her head. There's nothing wrong with your system, she diagnosed. It looks like your biometric token has somehow been revoked. I'm not even sure how that could happen. Very well, Bish said, but what do I do now? First, Annabelle said, I'll get the captain to access the monitoring file we gave you. Feel free to delete anything sensitive that you don't want us to see. She explained what to do, and a few minutes later she received a copy of the file's data. Now what? Bish asked. I'll have to go over that very carefully and see if we can reverse what has happened. In the meantime, I can gin up a reasonably good copy of your account from file records and such. It will technically be a multi, but it should fool most everyone, especially since you'll control it. You'll have trouble accessing some banking and other highly secure files, but if we can't get your regular access back, in time we can break the chain on the rest of it. Obviously, Annabelle continued, we don't want to crack into your regular accounts any more than is required, so if it can wait, I'd like to try and fix the problem first. Fine, Bish said. How long will it take for this new login? I'll send the package to Captain Van Moore as soon as it's ready, Annabelle said, but it will likely take a day. I'd like to go over Reuben Cobalt's old method and use that if I can, but even so, it takes time to mimic a well-used legitimate account. I think I can manage another day, Bish said. I've managed to get word to a few aides through the captain here. She finally turned on one of her trademark smiles and beamed it at Van Moore. And they can keep things afloat for a little while. I'll try to have it for you tomorrow, Annabelle said, then paged out of the call. Thanks for your help, Captain, Dex said. No problem, Lieutenant, the captain said. You can send me pretty ladies any time. He turned to Bish and favored her with a smarmy grin. After the call was over, Annabelle said, Yuck, those two deserve each other. Dex laughed. At least she'll probably have something to do while she waits for your magic. Ugh, Annabelle groaned. Now there's a mental image I did not want. Well, Dex said, standing up, I guess that puts paid to our lazy day off. Well, mine anyway, Annabelle said. Hey, if you have to work, Dex said, I might as well work too. He leaned forward and kissed Annabelle on the cheek. I'm going to go back to the apartment and do some detecting or something. Call me if you need anything. Will do, Annabelle said. And Dex saw her eyes unfocus as she already began to get lost in the challenge of her work. He let himself out of the apartment. Dex spent the afternoon, evening local time, rereading Annabelle's conclusions about the changes to the light of the Simulacrum Temple site. The technical details were beyond him, but he thought he might be able to recognize similar work. He ran a search for technical information about the artist Frederick Ahmad's work and let his system compile the data into a summary. While it worked, he played a little mandolin and let his mind wander. It seemed evident that there were actual people behind most of the events that were causing havoc in M-City, and while he couldn't be sure yet that this was true of Stella Bish's problems, he guessed that it was the case. And it also seemed clear that there were at least two people at work, maybe in conjunction with each other, but probably not. And that worried Dex. If it were a lone nut, he could almost understand it. Someone who felt left behind by what seemed like a mass migration to an online space which Dex himself found unsatisfying and false. He'd heard plenty of people state the opinion that theft or destruction of virtual property wasn't as severe as similar acts in the physical world, and more especially, that offenses against a person online were hardly even worth complaining about. It wouldn't be tough for a certain type of person to rationalize that vandalizing property or hijacking an account here or there might be a reasonable political, or artistic, act. What Dex didn't understand was why there would be a concerted effort to virtually wreck up the place. Or what could motivate people who didn't even necessarily know one another to commit such similar acts. He knew that he was assuming a lot of variables in this thought process, but he was just freewheeling now. He knew enough not to get too attached to any particular set of ideas, but also that theories that seemed far-fetched could become useful in the long run. He'd run through his set for the upcoming show with Chemical Celeste, and played a few of his new songs too, when he finally put the instrument away and went back to his system. He looked over the Frederick Ahmad synopsis and tried to find similarities in the way he coded his installations with what had happened at the LOS site. He paged back and forth between the synopsis and Annabelle's report, his mind getting foggier with each minute. One moment he thought he saw a pattern, then another moment it was gone. His system pinged and Dex saw an unfamiliar name on the ID, D. Ashel. However, the ID line showed that Ashel was returning Dex's own message, so he took the call. "Mr. Dexter, my name is Des Ashel," the voice at the other end of the call said. "I got your message through the Looking Through Doors and Windows gallery." Dex thought for a moment, then remembered his fishing expedition to the art gallery. "You're the curator there?" Dex asked, and when she said yes, he said, "The gallery has hosted shows for several emerging virtual artists, hasn't it?" "You're familiar with the gallery?" Ashel asked. "I saw the transhuman show," Dex said. "What was it called?" "Bodies in Motion," Ashel said. "Yes, that was it," Dex said. "I was very fond of the interactive piece with the ghostly footsteps." Yes, Ashel said, warming to the subject. "That was Kenji O'Rourke's work, Memories of Patterns. I find that O'Rourke is quite an interesting artist." "Indeed," Dex said. "Have you done any work with Frederick Ahmad or any of those artists?" "You mean the Open Gateway people?" "Yes," Dex said. "OG is a bit out of date these days," Ashel said. "Can you tell me a bit more about it?" Dex asked. "It's a kind of public art," she explained, "very outre in its heyday. Sort of a mix of graffiti, vandalism, and social commentary." "Why is an investigator interested in last week's art movement?" she asked. Dex explained briefly about the vandalism attacks going on in M-City, then asked, somewhat sheepishly, "I was wondering if it's possible that it's just some art installation gone awry, like a massive virtual graffiti piece or something." Dex heard the curator pause, as if thinking, then she said, "I don't think so, Mr. Dexter. OG is quite passé nowadays, and even at its height, it was never about actually destroying anything. I highly doubt that any of those artists would be involved in something like this." "So you haven't heard anything about it in the art world?" Dex asked. "No one is talking about some underground art prank or anything?" "Hardly," Ashel laughed. "This is the first I've heard of it. I'm afraid you're looking in the wrong place, Mr. Dexter. But I commend your open mind. Most people in your line of work would never consider the creative aspects of something like this." "Well, I appreciate your help, Ms. Ashel," Dex said and ended the call. So much for the art angle, he thought. As a last resort, Dex asked his system to take the raw code from the LOS temple and compare it with the code from Frederick Ahmad's installation. In almost no time, the report spat out a figure, 62% similarity. At first glance, Dex thought it was promisingly high, but reading further into the report, he saw that most of the similarities were in syntax and code that was integral to many object renderings in M-City. Dex guessed that you could take any two pieces of virtual property at random, and they'd probably share 62% of the same code. He was disappointed, but only a little bit. It had always been a wild card, and he was now glad that he hadn't shared this idea with anyone else. The trouble was that now that he'd given up on the art angle, he was plumb out of ideas. All that was left was to infiltrate every group of cafe-going M-City haters in hopes of finding one person who might lead him to whoever was behind one of these attacks. And he wasn't sure that he even had enough cash for the drinks, let alone the stomach to sit through more of their boring diatribes, especially for a mission with so little hope for success that it was clearly conceived out of boredom rather than strategy. On the other hand, he didn't have anything better to do, and there was a band playing at one of the joints he'd read about on the boards the previous day. He took a quick shower, changed into a clean shirt, and went downtown. You've been listening to The Beauty of Our Weapons by M. Darushawame. For more information about this and the other Anderson Dexter stories, please visit darusha.ca/dex. The theme music is First We Take Manhattan, performed by Donovan Alex and Yoko Rocks. More information at soundcloud.com/donovan-alex. Thanks for listening. I'm guided by
Jesus.